Folks, you are listening to The High Spot here alongside my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. Sitting on the other side, I am Brian Berga. Folks, spring seems to finally be in the air for us. You know what that means. No, we're not talking about baseball. We're talking about free agent frenzy, folks. It started off kind of the same time when the weather started changing, and how appropriate, Jeff, that the weather change in the NFL coincided together, because it's the changing of times now. Teams are remodeling their franchises. New looks are happening in terms of offensive, defensive schemes. A lot of things happened, but the first story that broke out, that was a shocker to me when I heard it, and actually you're the one who texted it to me, so I didn't really watch it on the mass medias out there. I heard it from Jeff Martin, first one to report. Check out his Twitter account. You can also check out our Twitter account, at High Spot Podcast, folks. We want to hear from you. Jimmy Graham is no longer New Orleans Saint, Jeff. Jimmy Graham has now gone to the, well, I could say former now, Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. And I want to get your perspective of this. When that happened, I was shocked. I was like, Jimmy Graham is now Seattle Seahawk. Great. Just more weapons for Seattle. They were lacking it. They re-signed Marshawn Lynch. That was a big thing for them. And now this, where do you put this in level, Jeff, in terms of some of the biggest, I would count it as a shocker in the offseason of the NFL this year?
Well, the Saints basically...
First of all, how you doing, by the way?
I'm good, thank you. I was waiting for the little, asking how I was. I feel rejuvenated. I feel refreshed. I feel like I can actually go outside and maybe put like a thin layer jacket on and not have to be bundled up in like 8 layers of clothing and stuff. But
you're not wearing shorts yet, are you?
No. I'm not like some of those people that I saw in the city the first time it broke like 50. People were wearing already a t-shirt and shorts. It's like crazy. It was like the first day of spring. Relax, people. It's coming, but not yet. But Jimmy Graham, let's be honest. The Saints have nobody to blame but themselves. They put themselves in a tough situation with the salary cap. And basically, Drew Brees won't restructure his deal. So we got to trade other people. And
how Jimmy, selfish is Drew Brees right now?
Well, maybe, but again, you can only, if you're going to make a certain contract once in your lifetime and you want to keep it, it's your prerogative, but know that everyone's going to suffer around you. So Jimmy Graham goes to the Seahawks, traded for Max Unger, so they get a center back and they get a first-round pick in exchange. And I tell you what, it's shocking because Jimmy Graham just last year signed a big deal, and you were going to think that he was going to be a key piece to the Saints and for the next 4 or 5 years, but that's not the case. Not the case in the NFL, because if you're making too much money and you're to the point where they need to fix salary cap wise and they need to move you, they're going to move you. And for the Seahawks, hey, they get a great receiver. They get a great tight end, and it's something, another weapon for Russell Wilson for him to get. And all power to the Seahawks. They are a better team today than they were a couple days ago. A lot of stuff in the past 3-4 days here to talk about. And Jimmy Graham was one. And, of course, the mad scientist in Philadelphia, Chip Kelly, makes a head-scratching trade, because I just was wondering, why would you trade a guy in Nick Foles for Sam Bradford, a guy who's been injured the last 2 years with the ACL tear in the same knee? I mean, what does he know that we don't know? And does he really believe that Bradford can lead this Philadelphia Eagles offense to what he wants it to be? I mean, I totally don't understand what the logic was. He really stood by that pay, the trade. So I wonder, Brian, you get rid of Foles, who had was injured last year with a broken collarbone, and you get a guy like Bradford, who got injured last year, but 2 ACLs. So if he rolls out, you know he's one rollout away from an injury again. What is the logic for Chip Kelly?
Well, the logic has to be, don't do too many rollouts with Sam Bradford. That's one thing. Secondly, he's been caught in the situation where a lot of experts, I use air quotes there, will say that maybe Chip Kelly is the kind of guy who's just, his mindset stuck on college football. He's trying to bring college football style of offense to the NFL. A lot of other coaches have tried to do that. Spurrier is the one that comes to mind. It was another guy in Washington where he tried to do the same thing. I think Nick Saban as well. It didn't work out. So Chip Kelly, I think, is all adamant in doing that. But again, at the same time, we can't question it until we see the end result. On paper, we're looking at it, and you're like, Nick Foles for Sam Bradford? Now, Nick Foles, mind you, isn't the most athletic, isn't the most mobile quarterback either. But for the most part, he was fitting the offense.
At least last he's got two good knees.
Yeah, at least he's got two good knees. Well, yeah, Sam Bradford, and even with two good knees, you would think, you know, he was struggling even before the ACL tear. So you weren't wondering there. A lot of people will be like, well, he's had so many offensive coordinators, it's hard for him to kind of settle what he wanted to do. But in this case, a lot of people were talking about how this could fit Sam Bradford pretty well, despite the rollouts, because it's kind of system he kind of ran somewhat in college, so he might be more comfortable picking it up than Nick Foles. This move doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. We'll find out in the end as, you know, off-season training begins. You know, scrimmages start, we'll see, but we won't know the full finished product until the start of the season. And, you know, you don't know what other moves they're going to make in the draft, too, to see what's going to happen.
And then even before that, we had LeSean McCoy getting traded to Buffalo. And then when Keke Alonso came back, he came out of an injury. And you question, what is Chip Kelly's mindset? What does he have planned? What does he know that we don't know?
I think that would have hurt them more, losing Shady McCoy to the Bills and basically just letting him go and having really no running back situation whatsoever in a system that requires the running back to run the ball. So that was the biggest shocker for me, that Shady went to Buffalo. And Buffalo was actually able to sign him because it looked like Shady wanted to be there.
Well, I mean, if you give somebody, if you re-up a guy with a contract,
and nobody wants to go to Buffalo either.
But if you give him 40 million reasons to, you know, I'll go to Buffalo.
Yeah. Despite the wings.
So Rex Ryan is going to ground and pound it with Shady McCoy.
We've seen this happen how many times? We've seen this with the Jets.
You know who's the most pissed off about this? Sammy Watkins. He's like, crap. There goes any stats that I'm ever going to get, because Rex Ryan is just going to run, and maybe he gets like...
I bet you Sammy Watkins is going to be the best blocker in the league next season.
Best blocking wide receiver in the league. Oh, Sammy Watkins got to be going, no! Hey, he's going to win games, though. They have a good defense over there.
But there have been a lot of trades going on still as the days go by and the weeks go by. There'll still be trades going on. But the biggest thing that was the major...
Free agent focal acquisition?
Point, yeah, focal point of the whole offseason was free agent frenzy, Jeff. And It did not fail to live up to its hype, because a lot of free agents signed to a lot of places. I'll let you start off.
Well, I mean, we're going to start in Miami, where the biggest catch of
I wish we were in Miami right now.
And, of course, Sue signs for a boatload of money. And, you know, a lot of it guaranteed, $60 million guaranteed. Mike Tannenbaum, former GM of the Jets, signs him, and I'm going to tell you right now, the AFC East is going to look like a killer, because a lot of the big names went there. So you have McCoy in Buffalo, you have Sue in Miami. I mean, and not to mention what my team did, but we'll get to that pretty soon. It's going to be a very competitive AFC East. Tom Brady, watch out.
It is. I mean, for the longest time, the New England Patriots have been the juggernaut of that division. And now it seems like the division's starting to pick itself up right now, where we can look now, and we'll dissect it a little bit in a few minutes on paper, of how this division looks lined up, the AFC East. It doesn't look like a cakewalk anymore for the New England Patriots, the defending Super Bowl champions.
No, it's not. It's not going to be. But they do have the advantage of having Tom Brady over everybody in the AFC East. But again, a lot of free agent signings. I mean, we already talked about the big boys, but... You know, talk about Julius Thomas going to Jacksonville. He goes away from Denver. We'll see how it works without Peyton Manning. DeMarco Murray, again, a controversial one, because you thought his heart was in Dallas. But you know what? Show me the money. And
wallet was in Philadelphia.
Yeah, his wallet was in Philadelphia, too. So Murray goes there. That could be you swap McCoy for Murray. Maybe Murray fits more to his running style, Chip Kelly's. You know, he's not going to have to run that much, because Ryan Matthews is there too, so they have a lot of interchangeable running backs. So we'll see where that goes. But again, that is going to be a team that's going to really run the ball a lot.
No, well, it all started off with Ndamukong Suh basically signing with Miami, and it's all kind of trickled down. I look at the list of free signings, and I'm kind of with you right now. The DeMarco Murray was kind of a huge question mark. You just wonder how he fits in that system. I mean, Dallas used him. Many carries last year.
And over so that's 300 carries
almost
last
300
year.
Carries. So that kind of worries you in the long run of how much punishment a running back can take. But at the same token, this type of running system that Chip Kelly has designed for the Philadelphia Eagles might benefit him, but who knows how much more wear and tear DeMarcus Murray has. There's always been question marks of him being injury prone. In terms of talent, this guy is probably one of the best running backs I've seen in a long time. Probably top 10 in the
all
league
time
right now.
After 1 year
in the league right now.
Okay.
I'm not putting him Canton yet, Jeff.
You sound like other Cowboy fans that are like,
exactly. What other Cowboy fans have other issues to deal with? You want a Dez Bryant? You franchised him. You know, let's wait for the video to leak. But yeah, like all these free agent signings, just reshapes a lot of teams. You saw certain teams in certain positions of consistency. Now, Philadelphia losing, like I said, Nick Foles. Don't know, you know, McClain has left as well. Shady McCoy is gone. And I have DeMarco Murray. And, you know, the New England Patriots right now seem to have lost a lot of people. It seems like that's always happens when you win a Super Bowl.
But the
a lot
good
of
teams lose. The good teams lose those players, but they're able to recuperate, you know, get serviceable pieces. And as long as you have Brady and Belichick, and as long as you have, for example, Flacco and John Harbaugh, right, as long as you have that foundation, you're always going to find pieces to keep you competitive. Because I think with the Patriots losing a lot of these people, everyone's like, oh, this is the demise of the Patriots. How many times have we said the demise of the Patriots, and they just keep coming back, winning 10 games, winning the AFC East? It's, you don't win it on paper. You know, you win it on the field. So the Patriots have been doing it for the last, trust me, I know, for the last 10-plus years, and it stinks, but they're the Patriots. And I think it all started, again, everything started with the McCoy and Kiko Alonso trade. And we're like, okay, that's huge. You don't see that. You really don't see that much. And then we got into the one that I love and the one that got me crazy. I told Brian all winter, I was like, why don't we have a Calvin Johnson? Why don't we have this kind of player? Because we were talking about Amari Cooper, and we told you that the Jets had to make a big impact in the draft. And they had all this money left over for 2 years because Idzik, thank you for doing nothing. So Mike McCagney makes an impact, trades for Brandon Marshall. I was telling Brian, we need a guy like Brandon Marshall. I had no idea we were going to get Brandon Marshall. 2 seconds later, I see on the ticker, and Brandon Marshall is a New York Jet for only a fifth-round pick. Yes, there's a new regime in Chicago, and they kind of wanted to push Brandon Marshall, you know, away from there because he kind of was a little bit of a, you know, spoke his mind when they were playing god-awful this past season. Well, he's a Jet now, and we have one of those top-tier receivers that you need in this league. And I was just ecstatic. And I thought that was my Christmas, Brian. I thought that was my Christmas, but I just didn't wait till the week after because that was when my Christmas started, when free agency started, and the Jets went spending and shopping like Idzik couldn't. You know, like Idzik was shopping at the dollar store, and Mike McCagney was shopping at Bloomingdale's, which was amazing. And we'll get to the first one. What did you think when you saw that the Patriots did not exercise the option on Revis, and the rumors that the Jets were going to be all in on Revis, and then next thing you know, the Jets get Revis? I'm ecstatic about it.
Well, first of all, there are a lot of good things in the dollar store. So I wouldn't be knocking down the dollar stores if I were you, okay? We don't need any litigation from them. But, no, to your point, yeah. I mean, the whole Brandon Marshall thing to me was a huge surprise. And funny how you mentioned that's the kind of guy you're asking for, are Calvin Johnson or Brandon Marshall. And lo and behold, I guess the Jets finally listened to you and said, you know what? Let's make Jeff happy. Not the Jet fans. Let's just make Jeff happy and get Brandon Marshall. But, yeah, the Darrell Revis thing, I kind of thought it wasn't going to happen. And the only reason why is because I feel like they were just, those bridges were already kind of burned, regardless of how much people like to say in the public or in the media, you know, things are good, we're fine. You like to think, you know, once a player plays for a certain team and then leaves, I wouldn't say they necessarily left on bad terms, but leave in the way that Darrell Revis left, where there was a lot of animosity and somewhat about him being selfish, wanting so much money, and the team can't afford it, yada, yada, yada. At the end of the day, thank Idzik now. I guess people can put that billboard out there for not spending that much money those two seasons, because then it turned around. Revis was able to win a Super Bowl, a championship, which he wanted, get the payday he wanted, and now put himself in a position, too, where I was kind of like you. I was torn 50-50 if this was going to happen or not. But as soon as I started hearing reports, you know, all the websites you and I look at for
please,
reports
please don't,
for NFL.
Please don't free plug anything, please. Just say websites.
No. And that's why I just did, you know, put your hand down, Jeff. But, yeah, when I looked at that and I saw that he had signed, I was like, doesn't surprise me. I know there are a lot of I'm not a Jet fan. There are a lot of Jet fans that are shocked. Like, yes, oh my God, he came back. But at the end of the day, when you put the right price out there, and a little wrestling reference there, everybody's got a price.
Yeah.
And in this case, Darrelle Revis did. And he put himself in a good situation. And most players, not only is the money important, Jeff, but they always want to be in a situation they're comfortable in. Darrelle seems to be very comfortable in New York. He likes it here. So that just added on to the fact, hey, it's a great move for him. And the Jets, kudos to them. Signing a great wide receiver, which is going to help out Eric Decker. And I mentioned that to you before when they got Brandon Marshall. Like, man, Eric Decker is going to be so free now, have one-on-one coverage because everybody's going to be paying attention to Brandon Marshall. It's going to be great for Eric Decker and his stats. So if you're going to pick him in fantasy, go ahead. Also, defensively, Todd Bowles got somebody who can be a leader on this team and basically the heart and soul of the defense, in my opinion, Darrelle Revis. You just improved your team on both sides of the ball so drastically in two moves that it can only go up from here. And Darrelle Revis right now is in the prime of his career, so it makes sense. I wasn't shocked. I was just a little surprised by it.
I was pleasantly shocked. And the fact that Woody Johnson can put his ego at the door and make this move, because this is a move that should have never happened in the first place. Darrelle Revis should have always been a Jet, and if it hadn't been for him being fed up with the agents and saying, you know, I'm not dealing with this anymore, then I totally agree that he would have been here. But you know what? Woody's a smart businessman. I think that he realized that he's got
to get... Is that what he said two seasons ago?
Now he's a smart businessman.
Now he is.
I think he checked his ego at the door. He realizes that he's got to bring the Jets fans back, and this is a great way to do it. But not only that, though. I mean, yes, the Jets had to spend this year. Yes, they had to spend like drunken sailors because of the whole cap situation. You got Cromartie back. So you rejoin Batman and Robin together. They rejoin forces. So for the Jets, it is going to be a very interesting year because they're all in. They're all in it to win it now. And you wonder with Ryan Fitzpatrick whether that's going to be the ideal situation. Of course, they made the trade for Ryan Fitzpatrick, and now there's going to be competition between Geno Smith and him. And all likelihood is that the Jets want Ryan Fitzpatrick to win the job. But we'll see. Can the Jets win with Ryan Fitzpatrick as their quarterback?
No. Plain and simple, they can't. I mean, they can't win it with Geno Smith. And for me, the biggest question mark has still been the quarterback position. They've filled in all these positions that needed assistance, to be addressed right away. But the biggest, which still is not there for the draft coming up in less than a month, is the quarterback position. I guess we're going to find out what Geno really has in him. He's got a good team built around him now. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, if he's your answer, it's not going to be a very successful season. You're right, Jeff. They're built for now. And that's the main point. They're built for now. You have to win now. And with Cromartie and Revis and Marshall, you really have a span of about 3 years now. You have to get this done. If you don't, then it'll be considered all these moves a failure.
So my main question is, what is the plan then? What is the plan? Now, they did fill a bunch of questions they need to fill with free agency. They they filled a lot of questions in free agency.
I'm sorry. All
right, go. All right, they filled a lot of questions in free agency. I can't say it. Did I say free agency right?
Yeah.
They fill a lot of questions with free agency.
Answer a lot of questions.
They answered a lot of questions with the pickups they made.
Right, free agent wise. 3, 2, 1.
They answered a lot of questions with a bunch of. A lot of questions they had on the roster, they were able. A lot of questions. 3, 2, one. A lot of questions that they had this offseason, they were able to fill through free agency, and now they have a chance to plan for the draft, and they have a chance to see what their holes are. And basically, it's quite evident. They're going to need a pass rusher. They're going to need a quarterback. And what exactly do they do? I mean, I wanted a wide receiver now at the point. Mariota had his pro day, and from what everyone says, it was a little underwhelming. So at the sixth spot, there's a lot of ways they can go. I'm thinking you can't have enough wide receivers, so Kevin White falls into that. That's the guy that I'm pulling for. But it changes every week. One week, it's Mariota. Then it was Amari Cooper when we started off this whole draft, when we were talking with Lisa Ann and Adam Ronis about Amari Cooper not even maybe coming out of the fourth spot to the Raiders. And now Kevin White is like the main target to Jacksonville. And again, a lot of things can change to the draft, but I like the fact that the Jets brass, Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan, are able to address the questions they had so far, fix the secondary, and now focus on what they need to focus. And that is on the offensive side, maybe a quarterback or maybe a pass rusher. But as we move to that, Bri, a team that's been a little bit quiet but has made some moves are the Giants. How do you feel the Giants have done in free agency so far?
We'll leave it to the Jets to leave the Giants in the back pages of the Daily News, finally. Again, this time, under a new regime. But no, the Giants have made moves that have made sense, but it's not anything in terms of the level of moves the Jets have made, or any team in the NFL. Giants addressed one thing that was lacking was the running back position, signed Shane Vereen from the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. It's a great move for them because they really need a tandem of running backs that are going to be able to run the ball. But here's the problem, Jeff. If you don't have an offensive line that can, you know, allow the running backs to be successful, I don't care what kind of running back you are. You could be, there's a time you loved Arian Foster. You could be any running back in the league right now and you can't be successful. So I think that was the major question the Giants need to address. You lose a tremendous leader on your defensive side due to free agency. So let's not say their defense was stacked to begin with, but basically Antrell Roll left for the Chicago Bears, signed, and the Giants didn't even offer him anything. They didn't even put up a fight for him.
Like, age was a concern with him and whether he had lost a step or not.
And this franchise under Jerry Reese have gone with the philosophy, Jeff, that, you know, once you hit 30, unless you're the quarterback, you know, we don't really want to attack you or be that aggressive with money. I don't know where that comes from. You try to find me somebody else in this free agent pool that we have right now, and maybe it's addressed in the draft. I mean, they're still trying to sign Stevie Brown, who's another free safety. Doesn't necessarily play the same position as Antrell Roll, but at the same time, he's had his struggles coming off ACL surgery, so you don't know where that's going to be. If you're the Giants right now and Steve Spagnuolo under a new defensive regime, which he would have done great in, you want to sign Stevie Brown just to have some camaraderie or some familiarity with the defense. You lose a tremendous leader in there. Their cornerbacks are torn. The linebackers haven't been good in a very long time. Thankfully, John Beeson finally signed, agreed to a pay cut. Well,
yeah, I mean,
people want to say, you know, injuries are part of the game, granted, but in his case, he's paid a lot of money. He really hasn't lived up to his potential.
Hurt his toe. I think it was a toe.
Yeah, it was on and off again in terms of would he come back? Was he not going to be back? Was he going to see a specialist, a second opinion? He's taking a pay cut, so that helps him. But still, a lot of areas need to be addressed. I'm happy for Shane Vereen. We also got linebackers from, you know, from the Jacksonville Jaguars, where we had JT Thomas from the Jacksonville Jaguars and also from the New England Patriots. I believe his name was
Jonathan Casillas.
You know, great additions, but at the same time, not the notoriety like the Jets had, like, you know, Brandon Marshall, Darrell Revis, and Antonio Cromartie.
They filled a lot of spots.
They filled a lot of spots, but spots that still have question marks, because the problem, I think, and this is where I can kind of relate the two with the Jets and the Giants, Jeff. The Jets are built for now. They're built to win now. But now you hope under this new coaching regime, they can use the draft, which the general manager has been known to have great draft
good understanding, of selection. Good director of college scouting.
Exactly.
Maccagnan
has been great at selecting in the draft, or that's his MO. Jerry Reese, not so much. And the key when you have players, star players like the Jets have right now, you need to start developing other players underneath them. The only bright side for the Giants right now, offensively, probably be Odell Beckham Jr. And I'm sure that was kind of a shot in the arm. They didn't expect him to be this good this quickly with two bad hamstrings. Now, how he does next season will be dependent when he has two healthy hamstrings and in his second year, and maybe teams play him differently. You hope Victor Cruz is back to 100%. And Eli, it all falls on Eli. Because as much as we want to right now talk about the defense and still the struggles they're going to be dealing with under a new defensive coordinator and offensively with the offensive line, if Eli does not have a good season this year, the Giants might find themselves in the same position they were last year.
But I think as long as you have Eli, I think that you're always going to try to win now. He's not getting any younger, and he's already given you two Super Bowl titles. Mm-hmm. Two Super Bowl titles he has given you. So you want to make sure that you know, you build around that. So I think, though, where I'm jealous at your team is that you guys have the quarterback. So you can build around that. And it's so much easier when you have the quarterback because then you get the wide receiver to complement them. Then you get the running game, maybe, or maybe you get that line. But, you know, to me, in order to keep Manning upright, you need to fix that offensive line. So I think that you're going to need to upgrade that in order for Eli to have, you know, a better year. I think towards the end, he grasped the offense, and I think that he got better as the year went along. So I think if you can, again, protect him, keep him upright, I think that the Giants' offense is going to get better. As much as I'm tempted, if Amari Cooper's at number 9, I have to go and build it through the line.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Eli kind of grasped the concept early on, then midseason, I don't know what happened, and you're right, towards the end, it seemed like they were kind of understanding it. You hope under second year, it'll be different, but again, these are all what ifs and if says, and you know you can't develop a team like that. Grant, you have the quarterback, but you say yourself too. Eli's not a young guy anymore; he's getting up there in age. How many more? We always like to use in sports the preferable window do you have to keep doing this? Falls on both the Jets and Giants right now. I just think the Jets, from how we spoke about them maybe a month ago at least, find themselves in a lot better position than the Giants do right now because. The Giants, you don't have to worry about your players, but, I mean, how much longer are we going to start hearing the rumors of Tom Coughlin getting fired again? I don't know. I'm waiting for it to be during the offseason again. He got signed to a year extension, which is great.
Which you wanted to make sure that there was consistency with the head coaching. And as we move away from the Giants, so a lot to discuss as we head into the draft now. Because, again, a lot of teams made their move. There's still a lot of free agents available. And before we get to you know, talking about the draft, and, you know, that's going to be in the future, and we'll have a lot of time to talk about that as we focus and move to the draft. What do you think was the biggest surprising free agent signing that there was? Did you think there was, like, wow, he went there, or did you think, wow, this team could have used that guy instead of signing over here? Like, what to you was, like, the biggest surprise of free agency?
Two. I have to say they're pretty much up there.
Two for the price of one.
One for Ndamukong Suh signing with the Miami Dolphins. I know it's the popular one everybody's talking about, but it surprised me he chose the AFC East. There were talks about the Giants. There were talks about even other teams, and it really
because he wanted to come to New York. That was the main preface in the beginning that he wanted to play for New York. But obviously
that didn't work itself out. And I don't think the Giants had enough money under the salary cap to even afford somebody like him. But for that team, that type of style of defense that they play, just made me beg the question in this situation that you and I have talked about before, did money play more of a role here in terms of the all-in, be-all of do you really fit in this type of organization? Do you really fit in this type of defensive scheme? And another one was DeMarco Murray, him signing with the Philadelphia Eagles, and we discuss it to an extent, but is it really a good fit for him? And another thing, the money talks, and that's why players walk.
But it was like $1 million more than the Cowboys. Was he just that upset that the Cowboys lowballed him that he was like, I'm not coming back here. I'm going to find opportunity elsewhere.
I bet a lot of it had to do with that.
He did reach out to the Eagles. He did call Chip Kelly and set up the whole meeting.
And the Cowboys, when you play that game, similar to how we talked about Darrelle Revis, when there are bitter feelings there, whether it be $1 million, whether it be $2 more, whether the guy's giving you a penny more than what you're offering me, sometimes that's...
It's pride. Sometimes it gets in the way.
Pride, and that's just the way it is in this vicious business that we love, Jeff, which is the NFL.
So here's another question for you. What do you think Chip Kelly and DeMarco Murray, when they signed the contract or right before, what do you think was the one thing that DeMarco Murray had to drink What do you think? What do you think was what do you think when he gets sit down and they offer him refreshments? What do you think is on the menu?
I don't know. I don't know what you put on there in terms of having a drink. I know the one thing they
probably, what he had.
What did he have?
He had a smoothie.
A smoothie.
Yeah, one of those nutrition smoothies that Chip Kelly is famous for. If you know anything about Chip Kelly, he's very innovative as far as like he has them on heart rate monitors. He has them on these. On these kind of like you have nutrition shakes, smoothies, and you know proteins, which is all kept secret, by the way. And basically, DeMarco Murray had it, and he was like, "Wow, you know, who put? Wait a minute." He goes, "What's in this smoothie?" So obviously, you know, we got to check on Chip Kelly's smoothies because he might be brainwashing these athletes to come to Philadelphia.
Who knows? Maybe it was just that good of a smoothie that sealed the deal. I mean, you and I will never know. It's only between Chip Kelly and DeMarco Murray what occurred in that meeting. But you have to think that knowing his carries are going to be limited and maybe have more space and ability of not trying to hit that offensive line, that defensive line, as tough as he did and was in Dallas, was definitely the breaker there. And, you know, better feelings with Dallas Cowboys. But, again, those are my two biggest shocking players that went to different teams that I scratched my head. I'm like, okay, I guess it makes sense. And then you find out how much they're making. Like, okay, now it makes more sense.
So we have put a ribbon on free agency. There's still a lot of more names to
But the big names are pretty much gone in a way.
Yes, you know, they're pretty much gone. So now it's just people, you know, trying to huddle and scurry real quick to latch on to a team and make sure that they don't get left out in the cold. So still more to discuss about that. But again, we touched on the big topics. And so right now what we're going to do is we're going to head in and we're going to talk about the road to WrestleMania. We're on our way. We are almost a little over 2 weeks away from me and you getting on a plane to California and enjoying the sun and the fun, and maybe not the card for WrestleMania, but the experience. And we're going to delve more into that when we come back, right, Brian?
WrestleMania and the road leading to it, back here on the High Spot. Never get tired of hearing that song, Jeff. Jeff, we are
Rocky
literally
Mountain High, Colorado.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the song I was thinking about. Man, me and Jeff. Man, if we were on a vacation together, I would quickly leave him at the airport. But unfortunately, no. This time, Jeff, we are going on a vacation to San Francisco. We're actually going to go to San Francisco and then be at Santa Clara for WrestleMania weekend. All the events, folks. Literally, it seems like a long time ago when Jeff and I first planned this, and now we can't wait. Like, the days are just dragging on to the moment that Jeff and I are going to be there. We're going to be joining. You guys can see us at Fan Access. We'll be there on Friday and Saturday mornings. Again, not to mention you listen to The High Spot with Jeff Martin, Brian Berga. You can see us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Jeff's is at Berga Jeffrey. And mine's at Bryberga for you guys, because we're going to be posting so much WrestleMania stuff throughout the week. We're bringing the podcast on the road. Hopefully bring a lot of guys that you've heard before previously on the show or not. You know, bring guests and just kind of give an update what we're doing on the weekend. But Jeff, we're looking now at how close we are to this epic event in sports entertainment. I still call it wrestling. And has it kind of built itself up to what it
what you thought it was going to be. Because to me, the card just isn't strong enough right now to boast that this is going to be an epic pay-per-view.
Was it a couple of days ago they were talking about card placement, or they were talking about where each match should go and how it one affects the other? Am I 100% happy with the card? No. Again, the fans want Daniel Bryan. It's so plain and simple. This is the one year where they're actually going to be like, you know what? We gave you that last year. This is what we wanted to do all along. And that, I'm fine with that. But if you are going to tell me that Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns are going to be able to put on a 20-minute match, 20 to 30-minute match, I got to see this. And I will be shocked. Again, I said I was shocked if Daniel Bryan was not going to be in the triple threat match here. I will be shocked if Seth Rollins does not cash in his Money in the Bank and he takes it away from Roman Reigns once he beats Brock Lesnar. Because we all remember when Daniel Bryan had won the title, and we remember when Randy Orton came in and cashed that Money in the Bank after Triple H pedigreed Daniel Bryan. I see the same thing happening here. I think that you need something in this match to make it original, to make it unique. And the Money in the Bank has never been cashed in at WrestleMania, and it should be done at this year's WrestleMania, just if anything, to save the card at the end, to save the main event.
Yeah, a lot of the upcoming weeks have been about the placement of the card. What match do you put in what position? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, etc. And to your point, Jeff, when you said that Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns are going to close out WrestleMania, it's just, to me, it just allows me to shake my head, because it gets to the point where I'm thinking to myself, do you want to risk everything with the ending that we all hope will happen? But you know what happens with us wrestling fans when we hope an ending is going to happen? Most likely, what does WWE do?
Swerve,
and they don't give it to you. Yeah, they don't give it to you at all. We're all hoping that the match will end with Roman Reigns defeating, and then before you know it, Seth Rollins cashing in Money in the Bank and becoming the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. But it's not guaranteed it's going to happen, and there's no doubt in my mind they might lean the other way. So do you save this for something like maybe a second or third to last match? We've seen WrestleManias before where the
that
title
really
hasn't
be
been the main event.
Do.
The title has not been the main event. The main event has been always The Undertaker, and now The Undertaker is going to go one-on-one, thinking that we had seen the last of him at WrestleMania 30 against Bray Wyatt. I mean, this is suffice to say that depending on the acoustics and the lighting and things of that nature, because it's not going to be dark
pretty soon.
Well,
it's the lighting, not acoustics.
Yeah. Sorry, well, the lighting not going to be as dark in Santa Clara around that time. Do you leave that to as a final match on the card?
Here's my question to you, and I'm going to answer your question with a question.
Typical of our father.
How horrible would it be to put Brock Lesnar as your third match of the night, or the third to last match of the night, and then for Roman Reigns, if you want him to be this big time champion, if he's your future, to be on, not be on the main event, and not, you know, have him hold the title up in the air while he's up on the top rope, and then they fade out saying you've been watching WrestleMania on the WWE Network, and that's the last image you see. That really says a lot that they're not banking on that matchup being the quality that last year's matchup was. And you know what? I think we're all hungover too, because I think that we all still have that image. I mean, can you believe it's been a year already since WrestleMania 30?
Seems like yesterday.
Right? So that image of us walking out of the Superdome going, yes, yes, yes. And now we're over here. We're a little hungover with this main event, because we're like, is this it? Is this all it's going to be? So what does that say about the main event if it's on third to last?
It'll be a shot to the WWE ego. There's no doubt about that you're putting the WWE World Heavyweight title. But again, at the same token, they haven't put a lot of notoriety behind that title anyway, for the fact that Brock Lesnar, who's been champion for now, who knows, since SummerSlam, it's defended every 3 or 4 months, so the title has not been, the championship, which is supposed to be the bread and butter of your company, has not been the focal point. So it wouldn't surprise me if it was maybe the third match into the card, and then saving the whole Seth Rollins confrontation to later on as the main event. Because to me, that's more of an attractive main event, to see if Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns, because you know Seth could carry Roman. Not saying that Roman is that bad, but, you know, Roman needs somebody he can work with well. Brock Lesnar has kind of resorted to being the physical juggernaut that he is, the beast, where he just has no well-being or wish well-being on anybody he's in the ring with, just basically massacres them and destroys them. It's punch, kick, there's no technicality behind it, which, you know, everybody knows I'm for that. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a question mark. What do you do here? But I think the biggest question mark is the way they're promoting this right now. That's the main thing they're focusing on, but that's not what I'm seeing as the lead-ups are going in as the weeks go by on Raw and SmackDown. What I'm seeing more of is basically the Intercontinental title ladder match that's going to happen where Daniel Bryan is going to put himself in, Sting and Triple H, and then Undertaker and Bray Wyatt.
Even that's not a good lead-up, because to me the best lead-up has been, as dumb as the storyline has been about the Intercontinental title changing hands. Okay, that's fine, and I don't need to see R-Truth all the time. I mean, honestly, he just doesn't do anything for me anymore as a wrestler. But the thing is, they're pushing, and this is what we wanted. We wanted them to push the Intercontinental title, and they are. And they're pushing the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. But again, though, Triple H and Sting, Brian, do you think that they've gotten their due as a rivalry? Do you think that you're pumped, you're psyched for this matchup? To me, the buildup could have been so much more. They have 2 weeks, and again, you have all the time in the world to push this, but they don't. And to me, you're gonna have to work a lot to get me pumped up for this match, as if you would have done it in maybe 4 weeks ago, where I've been like, man, Triple H Sting. To me, this is just, to me, it's on, it's a novelty, but nothing that I gotta stick around and watch.
Well, the biggest question mark for me when I see WrestleMania is to see the kind of shape that Sting's in. I mean, this guy reaching, he's 50 years old, and how much more he's got left in the tank? He said he had enough for one more, and now people are even questioning whether or not he is going to just wrestle one match WrestleMania. The main thing, Jeff, is he wanted to face The Undertaker. The streak would have still been intact, and then that would have been a huge epic buildup. The whole thing with Triple H seems last minute, it seems sporadic, put together. And the essence of the whole WCW versus WWE Monday Night Wars, which makes no sense to me whatsoever. I mean, there's no point to the fact that
you're like reaching 14 years ago.
Yeah, they're reaching out for things for people, whether they watch it on the network or not. I don't know. It's a great program on the network, but nobody is aware of the history behind it. And this is the funny thing, Jeff, where I scratch my head and I tell you this too, right? They so badly want to do away with the old, in terms of like things that already happened, and they don't acknowledge it as if we're not prone to it because we're the smart, air quotes, wrestling fan that we've seen this before. And they're like, oh no, this is the first time John Cena and Brock Lesnar faced each other, and we've seen this before at Extreme Rules. In the situation with the whole WCW WWE thing, how long ago was that? And now they're trying to bring that into the picture again, when most of their demographics that they're reaching for are like little kids. Tell me what 10 and 13 year old kid knows about the Monday Night Wars. They weren't even alive around that time. So, like you said, it's last minute. I'm basically in there more for nostalgia, in terms of it's the first time I'm ever going to see Sting in a WWE ring. We've seen him wrestling in TNA.
Which is good for about the entrance and about the
I'm not a fan of his song.
The stare down.
I'm not a fan of his song. And the fact that they did that promo with his voice was awesome. I'm like, give me a break. I mean, if you have to go through this much work to, you know, do all this, you know, hokey pokey stuff, then it speaks bad on them in terms of storylines they're building.
So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you for this card? Because last year was one thing. It was hyped up and exciting. This year, a scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of excitement for this card?
Honestly, and I've always been honest on the show, I would say it's about maybe a 3 or 4.
Wow.
I am not that excited for this card. There's not really a match that I'm looking forward to off the top of my head that I could say, hey, I can't wait to see it. At least that one's going to steal the show.
So California, the experiences, was going to have to make this be over the top for you then.
Well, yeah, it's going to be exciting for us. You and I are both going to be on the road. We're going to bring the podcast with us. We're going to be updating the fans on what we're doing. And
this is exciting, too,
and there's
the
something
way
about it, because we did this at WrestleMania 29. I think that was the first one we went to here in New York and New Jersey. And, you know, I wasn't feeling great. I was kind of under the weather. You weren't necessarily in the best shape because, unless you know, Jeff.
I had to put up with your illness.
Put up my illness. And, folks, you know, even 3 years ago, Jeff and I were still, working ourselves to the bone and enjoying it. But it's just the atmosphere around it is just something you can't describe. I've been told time and time again, and Jeff as well, you know, you don't know what WrestleMania is like unless you experience it. The moment we experienced 29, I told Jeff immediately after the show was over,
we're going to 30. And vice versa, after 30 was lived above and beyond expectations, you can't expect 31 to be the same way. But to draw, to fly to the West Coast, to be in that air, which we've never been before, and to experience WrestleMania weekend.
And to bring it to you guys, though, because I you know, I can tell Brian, hey, this is great. I can tell my friends, my buddies, anyone close to me, like, hey, this is what it's like. But we're actually going to bring this to you. We're taking the show on the road, our first road trip. I mean, it's got to be more exciting. This puts maybe at a 12 on my level because we get a chance to bring it to you guys. And again, we're going to try to, you know, not we're not going to try. We're going to update you as much as possible, bring you, you know, all the scoops, everything we've seen, so that you guys feel like you're a part of WrestleMania with us.
Yes, and like I said, folks, we want you to be a part of WrestleMania. So we would love to hear your questions. You know, hit us up at the High Spot Podcast on Twitter. As WrestleMania weekend rolls by, we're going to be there for Raw as well. We're doing the whole thing, folks. We didn't do it last year. It was kind of a last minute type of thing. So we definitely want to hear from you, the High Spot fans. But Jeff, like you said, I'm not disagreeing with you. I am looking forward to this event. But in your terms, what do you feel of the card? In your scale of 1 to 10, is this card maybe a 5, a 6? Because you're a higher scaler, or have more leeway than I do.
I'm much more easier to appease because I'm like...
I'm more critical of everything.
Exactly. So I'm going to say...
That's just me. I'm a miserable guy.
But I'm going to say 5.
5.
Okay. 5 just
because... So I said 3 and 4, so it's not far off.
No, just because there are names there. But I think what's going to save it is just being in California, having it in Levi Stadium, having it in the open air in San Francisco, which is beautiful. Well, Santa Clara. I think that's what's going to save it. I think also, you know, the night before, I think the Hall of Fame is going to save it. I think the weekend will save it. I don't know how much WrestleMania 31 can do it. I'm holding out hope that they do something where Seth Rollins cashes in Money in the Bank. I want to guarantee it. I'm going to guarantee it. But I think that's what they're going to do to make this one special. Because, again, the Money in the Bank has never been cashed in at WrestleMania. We were teased about it was going to happen a couple times, but it didn't. So now it will. Will it be cashed in at WrestleMania? Is Seth Rollins that special enough?
Well, I think it begs the question. I think he is special enough. I think the consensus, at least in my opinion, Jeff, is that they've kind of force-fed Roman Reigns. Again, I do not hate the man, but I feel like when you're forced to say this, this is the guy we want, and you're going to cheer for him or boo him, whether you like it or not. Roman Reigns has so much potential, but right now at this moment, to go up against a guy like Brock Lesnar, if you put anybody else in there, I wouldn't say anybody else, but say if Daniel Bryan was in the main event against Brock Lesnar, a lot of people would say that's so not believable, but it's the classic story of David versus Goliath.
But they like Daniel Bryan, and they would pay money
to see a match that lasts and end in 5 seconds. He's had matches in 5 seconds before against Sheamus. Or if you had Seth Rollins go one-on-one with Brock Lesnar, people would be salivating. I'm salivating now at the very thought.
Salivating
at the idea that that would happen. But I think the only way it works is that if Seth Rollins cashes it in at the beginning of the match, and this actually becomes a triple threat match again, but this time Seth Rollins throws his hat in there, this would show one thing. He doesn't need to be more of a heel than he already is. People already hate him. He has that heat that he needs. But if he goes in there, during the main event, as the main event starts and says, you know what, I'm cashing this in now. I'm not waiting until one of you guys are down. This would prove he is the legitimate badass that he needs to be. And he is the best in the business right now because he defeated the likes of Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, the two supposed top guys in the business.
So again, the High Spot at High Spot Podcast will be live at WrestleMania. We will update you as much as we can, as much as possible. So keep us in mind, and we will update you and give you all the stories from WrestleMania. Now, Brian, I have a little before we say farewell for today's episode. I got a little homework for you. I want you to do me a favor. We'll talk about this next episode, and this will bleed into the episode. Daniel Bryan last year was the WrestleMania darling. This year, you know, he got injured, took a little turn for the worse with his injuries. We thought he might maybe have to retire from wrestling. WWE's fault or his fault that he's kind of taken a step back this year? What do you think?
It's WWE's fault.
And okay, and we'll tease this because that's the homework. I want Brian
to... I was going to give you the answer. I was going to ask you the same question.
Oh, you got to stick around.
Okay.
Okay, so that's going to be...
Oh, so it was just for me.
No, it's a little teaser. No, I'm going to... I'll give you my opinion, but I wanted you to do a little homework.
Okay.
Be a little homework. Is it the WWE's fault or is it his fault that he is not main eventing again at WrestleMania? Because, you know, the fans have wanted him to do so. But whose fault is it in general? Is it Daniel Bryan for getting hurt, for having the audacity of getting injured? Or WWE for not having any faith in him after he got injured?
Okay, I'll do my homework, and we're going to need more than an hour to finish that segment. But, folks, you've been listening to The High Spot. Jeff Martin, Brian Berga. Jeff, thanks again for coming on. I know it's kind of a little short-minute, last-minute thing, but again, you and I, we always make it work, man.
Oh, a pleasure. Unbelievable what we're about to do, where we're headed. And, again, The High Spot at High Spot Podcast. Excited to be here for another episode, and can't wait to do this again next week.
All right, thanks. So he is Jeff Martin. I am Brian Berger. You've been listening to The High Spot, Episode 7, folks. If you want to hear more episodes and more little rants of ours, just go to SoundCloud.com, and you'll be able to hear at The High Spot. And again, hit us up on Twitter, at High Spot Podcast, along with Jeff, at Berga Jeffrey, and me, at Bri Berga, for all your updates on sports entertainment, and just anything Jeff and I feel like talking about. Jeff, thanks so much, man. I'll see you next week.
See you next week, buddy.